Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires and supported this month by our friends at Bell Racing Helmets USA. You know, James Hinchcliffe, the mayor of Hinchtown, probably the biggest story of qualifying weekend at the 2018 Indy 500 with his failure to qualify in the number 5 Arrow Electronics Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports Honda. Not the first high-profile driver who missed the cut, and there have been some in between him and Bobby Rahal, three-time champion, defending series champion in 1993, coming into the Indy 500 and failing to qualify. So this is a conversation I had with Bob a couple weeks ago about this very topic, and admittedly, on the 25th anniversary of Bob's failure to qualify, really had no idea a driver of similar high profile and magnitude to the series would actually unintentionally, obviously, follow in his footsteps. So there might be something a little extra poignant here, unintendedly poignant. Spoke about this odd 1993 where Bob had the motor to have, Chevrolet, but the chassis, legacy from the True Sports All-American campaign from 1992. True Sports 92C chassis, which was, as Scott Pruitt said, while driving it in 1992, a flexi flyer, something that just really struggled to put power to the ground, to handle consistently. And by the time they got to the Speedway 93, when Bob had taken over the program, had renamed it the RH-001 chassis, the Rahal Hogan team, everything went sideways. So, as I've mentioned before, sometimes it's enjoyable to talk about a racer's finest day, and also the days where everything goes wrong and you have heartbreak like Bob did 25 years ago. Those tales as well can be fairly powerful. So thank you to Bob for being willing to crack this open again on an anniversary that nobody really wants to celebrate. And I guess we also keep Hinch in mind because this is not a anniversary he is wanting to remember now or at any point in time in the future. You know, you can get every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast on iTunes, on Podbean, and also on our Marshall Pruitt Podcast Facebook page. I would kindly urge you to subscribe to any or all of those and help grow our listener base. All right, off we go. Bobby Rahal talking about 1993 and when all of his grand Indy 500 plans, coming off of winning the 1992 CART IndyCar Series Championship, did not go as intended.
Mr. Rahal, I keep looking at the result sheet from the 1993 Indy 500, and damn it, I can't find your name. You know, it is not nice what history has done. I'm telling you nothing new here, because you got to feel it firsthand, but as we're going into the 2018 Indy 500, we know that a couple folks are going to get bumped from the field, and you, at least in 93, your team was one of the big surprises that didn't make the show. I'm not sure where to start, but I know that you had the ambitious goal of using the all-American, made-in-America True Sports chassis to get you to the promised land. Is that maybe the good place to start of where the deficiencies came in?
Well, you know, I think, if you're going to be brutally honest, if I'm going to be brutally honest with myself, and of course, at the time you had to become so, I think if you recall, in 92, we won the championship first year as a team owner, driver.
Rahal Hogan, great little team.
Rahal Hogan had a great year, won four races, a lot of great consistency, and sewed the championship up before the last race, really sewed it up, actually I shouldn't say that, we sewed it up at the last race, but it was a previous race at Nazareth that really kind of set the stage, but nevertheless, foolishly kind of thought, we had a lot of confidence as a me, as a driver and as an owner, and I think the team, and we had the opportunity to test the True Sports car, which got, Barbara Truman, then still involved in racing.
Yeah.
And had the opportunity to test the true sports car that Don Halliday had designed, and you know, thought it was a pretty good car. And he did that in August or September of 92, tested in Mid-Ohio with the car, and you know, felt like, you know, this might have potential. And so then we had the bright idea, you know, I'll take full responsibility, but had a bright idea that, we should go this direction, you know, with our own car, because obviously if it was good enough and we're the only one who had it, we could win another championship.
Sure.
And I had a lot of respect for Don Halliday, and still do, and so it was like, hey, we should try to do this. And and so, you know, off we went. And of course, the results, yeah, I mean, there were some false hopes, I think, in the sense that, you know, we went to Long Beach, finished second in the car, we were sixth in the car in Australia. You know, it's like, hey, that's not too bad. You know, thought, well, you know, we'll go to Indy and you know, we'll be right there. And because the car had been competitive when Scott Pruitt drove it, and of course things changed, you know, from year to year, but nevertheless we felt we could take that basic car and you know, make a better version of it. You know, we got very heavily involved in producing a lot of components, you know, gearbox,
sure,
actually looking at a new tub, and frankly the project, in the end, the project was more than we could digest. And so anyway, we went to Indy, and I'll never forget, you know, before qualifying, Scott Remke, who was never prone to sugarcoat anything, you know, said to me, I don't think we're going to be able to qualify. And I said, you got to be kidding me. What are you talking about? And he said, well, you know, in those days, you know, Dick Simon would show up with five cars, all Ford powered.
Yeah.
You know, for the 500. Various other teams would show up with more cars than they would normally run. And, you know, Menard, who did not compete in the kart series, would show up at Indy with, you know, three or four Buick cars, which weren't competitive in the races, but certainly were qualifying.
Zillion horsepower, blow-em-up specials.
And, of course, you know, I said, well, no way. Well, it became pretty clear that, you know, that we had a problem. And, you know, and so we did everything we could, and it wasn't enough. And it was a very emotional, I remember, in our suite. Of course, I had a suite then, and we had all of our sponsors up there, and I'm up there with them, and and literally, I got very emotional, you know, not outwardly, but inwardly, as I'm watching the pace lap, you know, thinking, hey, I'm supposed to be out there, not up here where I am. And that really taught me a lesson. You know, a lot of good things came from that experience. You know, the facility we have in Ohio with all the production equipment and all the things that the Truman family and Barbara and Bud Weiser had built up, you know, through Steve Horn, you know, over the years. And a facility that still gives us advantages today. But, you know, at the time it was obviously not. I mean, here you win the championship in 92, and now you don't qualify in 93.
Crazy.
Yeah, for the 500. And, you know, Miller was my sponsor. You know, the idea that you don't make the Indy 500, I mean, that was the race that had the most importance and still does. And then to not be there, I have to say that, you know, the head of marketing for Miller at the time was a guy named Dick Strupp, Strup, and he was amazing. I think we had initially a 3-year deal with Miller, and so we were in the second year, and we went home with our tail between our legs. And the next day, a three-year extension came in the mail.
Wow.
You know, talk about the ultimate sign of faith. And so, you know, it was horrible. And of course, 2 years later, I got to see Roger and his team go through it. And you know, to add on to that story, so in '94 we show up with the Hondas, and we don't have the pace, but with Lolas, you know, says we had the same car as everybody else, but we didn't have the pace to qualify. What happened in 93 is really what spurred us on to have to lease two Penske's from Roger, and obviously, which did not go well down well with Honda, because we had to withdraw those cars in order to qualify the Penske cars.
Sure.
But I couldn't go to Miller and say, sorry, we're not going to make the Indy 500 2 years in a row.
Yeah. It was voluntary, right? You know, our whole contract, it said maybe.
They didn't care what motor I had in the car or what chassis I had. All they cared about was being in the race. So the 93 experience really spurred things in 90. You know, I mean, the ripple effect, you know, went beyond 93. And so it was a very traumatic time for us, for me particularly, to miss the race. Although I have to say, I think maybe that was God's way of keeping me out of the race, because I'm not sure the car was, it was pretty fragile. So I don't know, but I had no fun watching the race in 1993 from my suite.
Yeah, well, that's not why you got the suite. It wasn't meant for you. I know in speaking with Scott Pruitt recently about the 92 car, he said, I guess a bit like our dear departed friend, Mr. Remke, he wasn't surprised at all to see you have the problems, not because of your team or any of your efforts, but he knew from having raced the car in 92 that at least the model he drove, the chassis itself, despite having a Chevy engine, was just, you know, too flexible, too twisty. And no matter what it did down the straightaways, it was, he said, it just gave up way too much in the corners to be competitive. Yeah. Do you recall the same thing with, you know,
developed version? I think it was up to the fourth lap in qualifying. We actually had the speed to make it into the field. But it was just, you know, you weren't ever quite sure where it was going.
Mm.
Kind of an understeer, oversteer, it was not very confidence inspiring for sure. But we had made our bed and we had to sleep in it. And, of course, after the 500, we bought a couple Lolas and ended up finishing fourth in Milwaukee the next race and ended up having not a bad year. But it really taught me, maybe others, Tim Sindrick, he was there then, maybe a lot of lessons about overconfidence. Hubris is another term for it. We felt after 92 we could do anything, and it was clear that you couldn't do everything.
Well, I guess you look at it the other way. You were right. You could do anything, including not make the show, but that wasn't the anything you were hoping for, unfortunately.
And it's like I've told people, it was a mistake. A lot of good things came out of that mistake. You know, the facility we have in Ohio and various other things. And the best thing about the mistake was to really make you. It was a pretty big dose of humility, in the sense that you can't do everything if you don't have the resource to do everything. And we clearly didn't. Our intentions were good.
The ambition was high.
The ambition was good. You know, and I'll never forget after that, I got a note from Dan Gurney, you know, who was always accused of messing around too much. You know, what if he had gone with the standard? And how much more success would he have had? And I got a note from him that basically said, "Hey, you know, don't look back. You know, you tried. We've all, you know, he had done the same. And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. And so, at least I took some solace in that. And then, of course, I took real solace in it when Roger's team didn't qualify 2 years later in our cars, which had qualified. You know, so the same car. So I guess." Nobody's too big to fail. Let's put it that way. And
a crazy era, just a crazy era to consider of these things happening. guess the last question on this, Bob, and I, you know, I think you've already told us in one way, but you spend a lot of time engaged with corporate America, with sponsors, you know, even with young, you know, young people on the team, young people coming up. I'm guessing your the travails in 93, 25 years ago, plus also 94 a bit, I'm guessing those have become kind of time-honored lessons that you share with folks. You know, hey, these are learning opportunities that, you know, you can even pass on still today.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. Of course, today you don't have the ability to make those kinds of mistakes because you have to, you know, everything is spec, right? You got to do the, you can't try to find that that advantage through another car, another engine, or we can't another engine, but another chassis or what have you. But I think in the end, again, I think you always have to respect the sport. And you always have to understand I think the thing that came out of that the big most for me was the most important lesson in life to me is to know your limitations. And we didn't know our limitations after 1992, and that's what created the disaster in 93 and affected 94.
Crazy, crazy.
Yeah.
Well, if nothing else, Bob, you've got great stories to tell. You know, life's about stories, right? I mean,
yeah,
money comes and goes. All, you know, people come and go from our lives. As long as we have good stories, man, and they aren't
always—they
don't always come from happiness and success.
They're not always happy endings. Yeah.
No, I mean, look, and I'm not trying to be flippant here, but the favorite story, just about all the favorite stories from my own life, involve bumps and scars and. You know, you idiot. Why'd you do that? But,
I mean, look,
if all we can talk about is how everything is great and perfect, it's pretty boring, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you as always, my friend.
All right. My pleasure, Marsh.
And that was Bobby Rahal taking us inside his nightmare scenario in 1993 at the Indy 500. Also just quite interesting to hear about the lessons that were learned and some of the positives that actually came out of it. One would not have suspected there were things that were positive to come from failing to qualify. But as Bob found, there not only were there positives, he had a greater support from his partners. And this is yet another thing that we hope is in store for Hinch and the Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports team. All right, I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires and supported by Bell Racing Helmets USA this month. Thank you for listening.